Well, today, as you know, we're holding Gun Violence Prevention Sabbath. And just to let you know what's going on around the sanctuary, there's a table over to the east wall that has some resources on it. At the front of the table, there are multiple copies of the National Council of Churches resolution on gun violence that you're free to take if you would like a copy of them. All of the resources that are over there on that table, you can access by going to the website that's actually mentioned in this handout, www.piconetwork.org, and just searching for gun violence prevention. But if you want a hard copy, there are some hard copies there of the National Council of Churches resolution. There's a hard copy of some heeding the call information that you can take with you if you'd like. And there's one other piece over there about how to call your congressperson. And so just a resource for you. If you'd like to pick it up, you can pick it up on the way out today. These rocks that you have in your hand symbolize lives taken in Ohio to gun violence. The last year we have data for gun violence that is really put together well from all of the states and from many of the nations of the world is 2008. It takes a number of years to compile all this. And from that 2008 data, we learned that in Ohio, in 2008, 1,115 people were killed by guns. About a third of those were killed as an act of homicide. Another almost two-thirds were suicides with guns in Ohio. And as we end the service today, I'm going to invite you to come forward and thoughtfully place these in the baskets up here to help us remember the amount of violence that we have here in our country, much of it due to guns. And I want you to think for a minute about the displays as you walk up and as you put these stones down as we leave, because what we have up here are the number of gun homicides in various countries of the world. From the 2008 data. You can see Canada at the end with 196. You can see Japan over here with 11. And you can see America in the middle with 11,030. We live in a country that is out of control when it comes to gun violence. We live in a diseased nation. Over 100,000 people a year are actually shot. About 30,000 people a year in America die at the hands of firearm. 11,000 homicides in 2008. One of the things that makes me sensitive to this is that when I was in high school, I had gone to junior high and high school in a system, or some of you remember this, we sat in alphabetical order. And one of my friends just happened to have a name that was two letters off of mine, and so I sat with him all the way from seventh grade and on up. And I remember one day I got to school on a Friday. It was a couple days after the prom, and Jimmy had got a new car from his dad when he turned 16. He'd wrecked it earlier in the year. He found out that he didn't get into the college he wanted to get into later that spring. When prom rolled around, he got dumped by his date afterwards, and he went home, and what he thought to do was to go into the bathroom, find his dad's handgun, and end it all. This happens over and over and over in America. We think little of it, but the truth is that where we have millions and millions of guns being sold every year in America, 5 million guns get sold, we're going to have epidemics of gun violence. Everywhere we look in this country, there are guns. And paired with broken economic and social systems, which plunge families into cycles of generational poverty, and in the context of many, many folks in America feeling that they are powerless and thinking that having a gun in their back pocket is going to give them a little bit of power, in the context of a nation that provides inadequate health care to so many people who have access to dangerous weapons, in a context of a government that seems like for decades it has cared more about the interests of the multi-billion dollar a year firearms industry than it does about the interests of its own people. We have here in the good old United States of America a recipe for disastrous human loss and a recipe for social chaos. You turn your local newscast on in the morning, and how often is the lead story a story of a shooting? One of the things that shocked Carrie and I when we came back to the United States from Japan is the news broadcasts in the morning. We would get up in the morning in Japan and we would hear about some bureaucrat fighting in the Congress as the lead story. In America, it's almost always a shooting. Think about this. In Japan, in 1 year, 2008, the entire country, 128 million people, nearly half the population of America, there are 11 gun homicides. In Columbus, a city 150th the population of Japan, there are 70 gun homicides every year. 150th the population of Japan. Just think about that for a minute. It was a shock to us, and it was a wake-up call. And while people keep on dying in our back rooms and in our back alleys, the church has said close to nothing about this epidemic. When America has a per capita gun rate nearly 10 times that of Canada, a country with an unpoliced border just north of us, and a per capita death rate literally hundreds of times that of many of our European developed nation colleagues, why is it that the church can sit back and simply consider this normal? The church, particularly in modern America, is, I think, very confused about what Jesus actually said about violence. For the first 300 years of the Jesus movement, remember, people assumed that Jesus was a pacifist. Early disciples of Jesus refused to be conscripted into the Roman army at their own peril. They were thrown into Colosseums and fed to lions. They were killed at sword point because they believed that Jesus didn't believe in returning evil for evil. If you read the New Testament, you hear things like, "Blessed are the peacemakers. If anyone strikes you on the right cheek, turn to them the left." You have heard it said, "Love your enemies and love your friends and hate your enemies." But I say to you, love your enemies. Do good to those who spitefully use you. Do not return evil for evil. Put your sword back into your sheath. For those who live by the sword will die by the sword. But yet we live in a country in which the majority of people call themselves Christian, and they seem to have no problem whatsoever with the machinery of warfare and empire. They seem to have no problem with the millions of guns being carelessly and recklessly sold every year in this country. And even with the claim that Jesus would have supported the use of firearms to solve problems, or weapons to solve problems. How in the world can churches do that? Well, one of the ways that they do it, they try to do it, is that I've been in many, many churches like this as I grew up, and they use this passage right here. Look, doesn't it say, didn't Jesus tell the disciples, grab your money bag and take it with you. Take a traveling bag, and if you don't have a sword, sell some of your clothes and buy one. So here we have a situation in which the vast majority of stories about Jesus in the New Testament say, turn the other cheek, put your sword back into your sheath, do not return evil for evil. And here we have this funny little story about Jesus saying, go and buy a sword. What do you make of that? Well, one of the things that I think it's important for us to know, because we need to talk to people about that, we need to have a national conversation about this, and it needs to start right here in the house of Jesus Christ. We need to know how to be able to talk to people about verses like this. And here's the way you talk about, here's one way of talking about it that I find very logical. A very interesting passage of scripture. You can tell why Jesus told them this. He explains it right afterwards. He says, do this because the scriptures say, and he's quoting Isaiah chapter 53 here, he was considered a rebel. This is a Greek translation of the Hebrew scripture. Jesus was reading the Greek translation of the Hebrew scripture when he was alive. It's called the Septuagint, and the Septuagint has the word here, anomos, which means no law, the lawless one. That he was, according to Luke, Jesus is fashioning himself as the suffering servant in Isaiah chapter 53. And so he has to fit the bill of the suffering servant, and the suffering servant is reckoned an anamos, a lawless one. And that word anamos in Jesus' day is used to refer to a bandit or a rebel against the Roman government. So Jesus says to his disciples, grab some swords. We have to look like anamos, right? They say, well, we have two. And Jesus says, enough. Because what's the point? They go out into the garden. The crowds meet them. And here they have swords. One of the people takes the sword and strikes off the ear of the guard that's there to arrest him. And what does Jesus say? Enough. I didn't mean for you to use that, right? The purpose of bringing swords is to let them know we had swords to use, and we didn't. That's why two is enough. And that's why Jesus makes the claim later on when he talks to the guard. He says, enough of that. He touched the servant's ear and healed it. And he spoke to the chief priests and the temple police. And he said, why do you come out with swords and clubs to treat me like anamos? Do you think I'm one of those? The whole point of this passage is to say, we have swords with us, so you will know we will not use them. That's the purpose of that passage. And yet, what is it turned into in a modern American discourse? A justification for people carrying around handguns so that they can pop off their neighbor if there's any threat to their life. In direct contradiction to the clear meaning of Jesus' sense here. It's strange to me, but this is the way that a lot of people think. Jesus says later to the people who are arresting him, now I give myself to you. It is your time. It is the time of darkness. And what is he referring to when he talks about the time of darkness? The darkness is that you think your act of violence in hanging me on that cross is going to solve the problems we face as a society. And guess what? It's not. What you're starting by hanging me on that cross is a movement that is going to resist you for millennia. The sword, Jesus knew, never solves problems. In fact, it only worsens those problems. And pulling a trigger never solves the problem. In fact, it often just worsens the problems. I knew that from dealing with friends of Jimmy Culberson way back in high school and by watching his family. I've sat with a mother whose son just committed suicide in her front yard. It causes problems. Perhaps many of you have had the same experience. Perhaps some of you have survived the trauma of war. Perhaps some of you here in our church knew people personally who have been victims of gun violence. And I know we know people who are friends with Gabby Giffords right here in the congregation. This is a real issue. We have to address this violence in our culture, and we have to address the problems of guns if we're going to be faithful disciples of Jesus. And so we need to ask ourselves as a congregation, what can we do? First of all, I'm going to be very pragmatic. I'm not against a person owning guns in their home, but if you have a gun in your home, a hunting rifle or whatever it is, please secure them. And if there's anybody in your house that starts to feel depressed or that seems like they're having a rough time, I encourage you to take that gun out and put it somewhere else. A storage locker, move it to a family's house, but don't have it there during that time. It's a very concrete step we can take. The next thing I'd encourage you to do is we need to educate ourselves about this gun epidemic and the problems that exist because of the legislative gaps in America. American gun laws are the weakest gun laws in the developed world. The gun lobby often makes the ridiculous and dishonest claim that there are over 20,000 gun laws in America. But, in fact, there are very few national restrictions on the purchase or possessions of handguns. And there are no national restrictions on assault weapons. There is no national registration system. There's no licensing requirement for handgun purchasers nationally, and only a few states and cities require or even maintain these. Federal law requires only a brief background check for handgun purchasers, which is dependent upon information housed in the NCIS, which we all know is incomplete. And there are many, many states in which a person could go out and buy a weapon in the United States at gun shows, over the internet, from a private seller, and be subject to no background check requirement whatsoever. The result? What we've created here in America is an easy gun traffickers paradise, where a gun can be purchased in a state with weak gun laws, often by some straw buyer who buys in bulk, and then those guns can simply be transported and resold on the black market in another place where the gun laws are stricter. What we need to begin doing is to mobilize people to implement a set of gun laws that are more in line with those of the other countries you see up on the stage here, other developed countries in the world, that have sensible gun laws. So I encourage you to think about what you can do when it comes to calling your own congressperson or being involved in this movement at this particular crisis point in American history where we're thinking about it again. Doesn't it seem right for us as followers of the Prince of Peace to begin lobbying Congress people and asking them to consider these sorts of things? Legislative barriers to illegal trade in handguns. Mandatory and extensive background checks on all gun purchasers, no matter where or how those guns are sold, to close the gun show loophole. To consider mandatory waiting periods before a person can get a gun so that a person can't just at a whim go into a gun shop and buy something in certain states or cities. A federal ban on military-style weaponry and ammunition to citizens. An integrated handgun registration system so that we know who has guns in America. Requirements that owners report lost or stolen handguns so they don't end up on the black market. And moderate limitations on volume purchases, which has been suggested by the National Council of Churches, of one handgun per month. Why has the church not been doing this? I have no idea. I really don't know. Our national denominations, the United Church of Christ, the Presbyterian Church USA, the Methodist Church, the Episcopal Church, and even the social action networks of the Catholic Church have made national body declarations for stricter gun control laws. And yet, what do our local churches do? I was asked by someone this week when I told them that we were having a gun violence prevention Sabbath to give me the names of other churches in the area who were doing similar things. And you know how many I could find in the 3 months of 2013? Zero. Though the call has gone out for them to participate. So why don't we say something? Right here in Ohio, Mayors Against Illegal Guns and 1 Million Mothers for Gun Control and the Ohio Coalition of Gun Violence are busy working, and yet the churches are not participating. And that tells me something not about the movement, it tells me something about the churches. And it's time for us to wake up, and it's time for us to get involved. And so I encourage you, this Saturday, February 23rd, at the Columbus City Hall, there's going to be a rally for sensible gun laws, Ohio Rally for Sensible Gun Laws. If you can make it down to Columbus, I'm going to be there carrying a sign. And if you want to come with me, tell your friends. We're going to be there at City Hall Saturday, the 23rd, 11 a.m., to make a statement to our legislators that we think we should be one of those developed nations and not more like a third world country. And before we end today, I want us to think a minute about the lives that are represented by all this data and all this talk and all these numbers. I really don't like all this data and all this talk and all these numbers because we forget that real people are involved here, real people who have futures, whose lives are precious, created in the image of God. 30,000 people a year in this nation lost to gun violence. 1,115 in the state of Ohio alone. Gun homicides in Ohio in 2008 were nearly 500 people. How many times is that the rate of gun homicides in Japan, which had 11? I encourage you to hold those stones in your hand. Just pour that cup out and hold them in your hand for a while. And think that each one of these stones represents a precious person whose life was lost to gun violence. Just carefully on one of these trays, and if they overflow, then we'll mound it up around. But think about the lies that these represent as we bring them forward. God cares about these people, and God calls us to care. This is not somebody else's problem. It's not their problem. It's our problem, and we can be a part of solving it. Let's all stand, and we're going to sing together this song, God, Listen to Your Children Praying. Before we do, I invite you to look in your bulletin for this litany of remembrance. So I'm going to invite you to stand now, and let's join together in this litany of remembrance.